have in Japan. And I'm going to leave you with that, and I'm going to leave you with this, and we're going to fade out, and we'll see what happens at the 10 o'clock hour right here on KBOO Portland.
Dr. Demento, I am here in a land of happy, freaky people. KBOO Portland.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian. You never know what you will find on your radio / interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
They're going insane. And eventually,
that's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to the Talking Earth on KBOO Portland. This is being recorded in the middle of June. You might be listening to this in the future on your way to another galaxy. I'm Dan Raphael, and as I said, KBOO, community-based, volunteer-fueled, free-range radio. Have you contributed to us recently? It's contributions from folks like you that pay the station's bills. Go to kboo.fm and see how you can help. I do the show once a month, and this one's a little different, as I only have two featured poets. Not that I didn't try. One writer wants to do this show, but is not in good health. Then there's the three poets who didn't answer my email queries about recording the show. I should go out to more readings, find more people, and hey, if you want to read on the show, let me know. But I'm not complaining, because this will be a grand show, as the two featured poets, Leanne Grable and David Abel, no relation, are wonderful and very different from each other. But I'm going to start with three poems from Muse in a Colonized Body by Yesenia Montilla. I found this book by accident. It showed on my computer screen while I was looking things up at the library, and for something else. But the book's called Muse Found in a Colonized Body. Muse found in South Carolina. Unarmed black man shot, again, and it took me a moment to swallow. Officer charged with murder. Because gravity's still working just fine, and it ain't the end of the world. Birds are still chirping as if nothing's gone wrong for a white man, and I want to holler hallelujah, celebrating in my bed with champagne and slow whistles escaping through my teeth. Maybe I shouldn't be all fucking uppity about it. Maybe I shouldn't celebrate reprimand. A black man is still dead. Again? Lately I am slow burning bourbon in the throat, horrified of my own bitterness. I'm going to build a shrine with my soot-filled heart to a hero in this story. Fidon, sauntering about being canopied from the sun by trees without eyes. I won't forget your name. I always will remember you recording a black man running away and getting shot in the back. Thank you for staying and capturing humanity at its worst. Into the grass, thank you for how you cradled Walter's body and soaked up his final heaving breaths. Many of the poems in this book begin with the word muse. The actual title poem, Muse Found in a Colonized Body, is in several sections spread throughout the book. It's worth, yeah. Muse Found in a Cracked Spine, for Freddie, and so on. I want to make this poem so pretty, so thin, so white, a spine. I can do that. Been writing it in all my different incarnations for over 400 years. This poem about another dead black man. This one will be different because this one is about my own shortcomings. I've wasted years and have not produced one soldier for the cause, while my enemies are rabbits. I've been barren. Tonight, I'm gonna make babies. I have nothing to give this war apart from bodies, bodies that will die, bodies that will run, precious brown bodies that can take a beating, bodies, 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 bodies that will reproduce more bodies, bodies with a poet's tongue and Baller's hands and Basquiat's eye, a surgeon's brain, a gangbanger's heart. Bodies is what I am giving this world, because the winner will be the one that is willing to sacrifice their children. Muse Found in Magical Realism. She was born with lace gloves on. It was a miracle. Her hands were light, and everything she touched turned to something else. It was a problem, clearly. Like when she learned to walk and went about the house turning the furniture into dolls, porcelain everywhere. Let's not even talk about her father's face. The first time she touched his cheek, it was a tree. It offered her shade from the summer heat. Imagine when she learned how to kiss. She was fascinated by lips and reached for them. Her first love sported an elephant's trunk, her second an owl's bony beak. I wanted to say that at some point she learned to control it, that when lonely she would walk out into the city's streets, touch a street lamp, and a lover would appear, his beard perfect for touching. But she was never able to. Else he'd become another thing. Her ability grew unapologetic. She touched her breasts once, and they grew two sizes with orchid faces. And did I mention she never mastered the art of love? Fickle thing, how could she, when everything she desired always turned out to be different? Towards the end, she took off the gloves to feel the world, and it turned into a pile of clovers. Having lost everything, she touched her own body and became cattle. She ate the world, ate it all. Yesenia Montilla, Muse Found in a Colonized Body. But hey, let's get local. Leanne Grable. Leanne is a poet and illustrator in love with performing her work in collaboration with other performers. She is the author of a variety of books, some print, some illustrated, poetry and memoir. She's teaching, writing, and illustrating books of poetry and memoir. Leanne and her husband, Steve Sander, ran the legendary literary cafe, Cafe Lena. And here's Leanne Grable.
Okay, hello. I am going to start with an excerpt from Pains and Joys of Aging, also known as Old with Jokes, which is a chapbook available for purchase, that was created for Art Lab 2023, debuted 1 year ago at the Eastside Jewish Commons. Pains and Joy. It also was published in a version of it with drawings in Oregon Humanities Journal. Pains and Joys of Aging. On August 4th, 2023, I turned 72. Oh, it's a good even number, 4 times 18. 18, a good luck number, but damn, 72? That's like a grandmother age. But I guess I am a grandmother, and I suppose I could be dead. Nothing much has changed, except I suppose the intensity of the aching, and the dying seems to be picking up speed. Roberta, Sarah, Sherry, Lynn, Charlie, Mark, Gloria, now Karen, Walt, and Martha. You know, Jean Calment, the longest-lived white woman in recorded history, lived to be 122 and a half. She rode a bike until she was 100, and she smoked cigarettes daily until she was 117, and then she died on my 46th birthday, Barack Obama's 36th birthday. But leaning positive, if I'm like Jean Calment, I could live for another 40, 50 years. My God, I definitely need to learn how to relax and how to tame that voracious hound, vanity. Because old skin grows so thin and it overreacts to everything. My arms now look like a 19th century map of the world, sepia, small continents and bodies of water in all tones of tan and brown appear everywhere, suddenly. If I lightly bump a cabinet door, a tiny Finland suddenly appears on my arm. Or if I take a Band-Aid off, the abrasion left by the adhesive looks worse than the original abrasion. It could have started off as tiny Sri Lanka, for instance, but then suddenly it's the entire continent of South America. Then there's my hands and feet. They've taken a hit. Once adorably cherubic, now they're root vegetables, sea creatures. Bunions like barnacles bulge above the instep. My toes are now a haphazard family of midgets. Like goats, they nudge each other and ride up on each other. Such rude molestation. My big toes are bullies, big bullies. But frankly, my big toes are innocent. And my fingers are innocent, but they defy, they veer into each other. My pointers lean into my birds as if trying to talk those bastards down from their rage. I do still have good biceps, the most youthful part of my body. I still lift, but only in the living room. But the underside of my biceps, my God, they've given up. They're sacks, scantily filled like unused backyard hammocks. And my muscles now bully me. Do you know what I mean? They cramp and jerk. At night, I can feel them thinking about hard things like fascism and cancer. At my 50th high school reunion, there was a wall of the dead. It was not a bulletin board. It was a wall. There was my 5th grade best friend, my 7th grade boyfriend, the only black girl in the whole school, and of course, Jackson Takata, the first hippie at my high school. Jackson stole Marty Ballin's capo when the Jefferson Airplane played at our high school in 1967. The principal wouldn't even let us stand up, let alone dance to White Rabbit. I'm shrinking dramatically also. Sometimes I feel like I'm in another species way down here. Borrowing from Randy Newman, at this pace, pretty soon you're going to have to pick me up just to say hello. And then there's memory, that hound. I woke up the other morning and I couldn't remember Mariska Hargitay's name. Then I kept saying Alicia Silverstone when I meant Christina Applegate. And I can never remember Kelly Clarkson's name or cilantro. But then I read this book by a neurologist who said that the brain in the 70s just spends more time with itself, savoring its own ideas, begetting ideas, begetting ideas. Frankly, it's always been like that. But the point the book was making is it's not that concerning if I forget Griffin Dunn's name. I'm just preoccupied with myself, like always, like everyone. The book also said my brain has finally learned how to work harmoniously, the left brain and the right brain together. If only my brain could train the world. Oh, and there's another joyous thing about entering the 70s, and it's big. My skin finally let me move in. No doubt the plus side of the skin's loss of elasticity. For most of the past 60 years, I've been trying to live in my skin, but I always had a leg or an arm sticking out or caught in the door. So much restlessness. But then I got in, and it's so relaxing. I mean, I love the color palette, all the reds and blues and purples, but there's so much clutter in here and way too many dusty old habits and stale postures. But I'm still celebrating because I'm in my skin, and it's a huge win. I'll clean up later. Oh, and I have one tip for the vain. If you wear glasses, but you take them off before you look in the mirror, the blur becomes a magical scrim. With good lighting, you can take 20 or 30 years off your face. That was an attempt to be funny. Words in Walt, a love story. For Walt's memorial, which was 11/5/23. I went to my first open mic poetry reading in the fall of 1975. I was visiting a college roommate who had moved up here with her boyfriend, who was from Oregon City and had actually heard of Walt Curtis. I'd never been to Portland before. I'd never been to a poetry reading before. I'd never been around poets before, but I was reading poetry and writing poetry, albeit bad poetry, sad poetry, mad poetry. I fell in love with every single poet there at first sight, but mostly I was mesmerized by the host. It was Walt Curtis. He was 34 years old and in the prime of his brightness and magic. Yes, his baggy pants were unbuttoned at the top and barely holding on for dear life. And yes, he had the silliest hair and the most terrible shoes, like all men at the time. And yes, he was like a cartoon character, his body virtually disappearing when he turned sideways. But I fell in love with Walt Curtis at first sight. I fell in love with his lack of convention, his lack of pretension, his scads of invention, and I fell in love with his histrionic movements, his askew, and I fell in love with the way Walt Curtis played his mouth like a wind instrument, and how his hands and body danced to the rhythm of his words, and I fell in love with his words. They were as beautiful and ugly as they could be, bright, dark, sodden, smoldering. And I fell in love with how he offered those words to us as if they were absolutely necessary. Yes, Walt Curtis was a touched preacher, and I heard the word, but I didn't want to follow him. I wanted to be him. I decided to move to Portland that night, no pros and cons list. I sold my stereo, Beatles albums, childhood piano. I can still hear my father screaming about it. But in 9 days, my new boyfriend Donnie with his long blonde ponytail and I were on the road for Portland. The skies as we entered Oregon grew soft white breasts, ripe with hope. Endless hills and velvet leotards rolled by, bowing before mountains calm as cream, wearing avuncular cliffs, streaming waterfalls, graceful and glimmering, just like Donnie's ponytail. The open mic was at the Long Goodbye on Northwest 10th and Everett, a dark, smoky, multi-level bar, just as you would imagine it to be. The crowd was also dark, smoky, and multi-level, poured about in spills, shedding silver teardrops, wading in silver teardrops, puddles of teardrops. The host was still Walt Curtis, his vast pate open like the land, his hair floating above his head like an enormous dandelion, and his pants, those same damn pants, holding on for dear life. Walt Curtis wasn't really sexy or even sexual, in my opinion, but he was astonishing, brave, naughty, shiny, sweet, ridiculous, sage. His voice preened and pranced, spit and swooped. His body preened and pranced, spit and swooped. I adored it, and I wanted to try to read, but I was too scared. I had my poem stuffed in my peachy, clutched in my hands, but I was too scared. Walt was closing down the reading. But then my friend pointed at me and said, "Wait, Walt. She wants to read," and she pushed me up onto the stage. My hands were shaking violently. They were whipping violently through the air so that my peachy was burping. They became their own motor, their own weather system. But I started. By the time I got to the third line, the word droplets, I was calm, calm as cream. I could feel my words going all the way through my body, out my mouth, and it felt so damn good. It was a yes, a total yes. Walt came over to me as if he were Johnny Carson and hugged me stiffly, his skinny ass in the air. "Those were very rich, honey," he said. "What's your name, honey?" I went home that night and worried for a second about what rich meant in that context, but mostly I was blissful, reading my very personal poetry to a room full of poets on purpose. Went right to the top of my top 10 list, followed by solitude, silence, daughters, my bike, salad, loving husbands, and so on. But I really adore the poets, how they offer their words to us out loud in the best words, as if those words are absolutely necessary, and they are necessary, and they are meant to be danced to. And finally, kind of a reboot of something a bit political. I am not going to speak about Gaza, but I'm going to speak about America. Peeping to Survive starts with an epigraph by E.E. Cummings. "May my heart always be open to little birds who are the secret of living. Whatever they sing is better than to know, and if men should not hear them, then men are old." It's spring, and little chickies, all plump and butter yellow, all fuzzy and cozy and light as a baby's breath, are peeping, peep, peeping. It's spring, and little birdies, all fluffy as Persian lammies, are cheeping, cheep, cheeping. It's spring, and little humans have noticed how the balance... Wait. There is no balance. There is no balance. And they are off kilter as F. We can't sleep. We can't sleep for fear of what we'll dream, for fear of what we'll miss. We're afraid to touch our bodies for fear of what we'll touch. We lie in bed just as the birds rise and fight off fear, who tries to sock us, who pounds our pillows, who makes our heavy heads bounce. And fear is searing and relentless, and fear is shameless and insidious. And we must learn now how to fall now into fear's bulging pelvis. Oh, it's spring, and there are brains that are going down. They are lying dead, like they are dead, which they are, like it's a brand new human trait or something. It's spring, and the bodies are mostly brown. They're going down. They're lying dead, like they are dead, which they are, like it's a brand new human trait or something. It's spring, and there are butterflies, gorgeous butterflies, these gothic butterflies who are floating around in their skin-tight ensembles. They turn the flowers into bumblers. They turn the robins into audience. They teach the oak trees a new swoop, a new dip, a new humility. And I'm trying just as hard as I can at emulation to shimmy softly like a light breeze amidst the baby green peach leaves that whisper gently, that tinkle sweetly like some bells in the navels of angels. But the bodies, the brains, the souls, they're going down, and the mothers are screaming, and the fathers are dying, and the babies are dying, and the sisters are dying, and the brothers are wiping it up. Oh, it's spring, and young roses are draped in jewel-toned velvets. Bees are wearing sable. Dahlias and peonies prance about in giant hats. Oh, I love a parade. Don't you love a parade? The way we all dress up and try so hard. Oh, I sob and I stare at nubile lilies and lobelia. God, they're gorgeous. God, they're arabesquing now like ballerinas. God, they're arcing curves with such an elegance. I feel like blushing and bowing, but I see reams of dark yardage, and I am grappling. I'm grappling and grappling, and I know I'm better at grappling than you are. I wear grappling like a cardigan sweater for warmth. You know, my father was the loudest grappler of all, the king of the grapple, Grable the Grappler. But lately I've been grappling with pandemics, but not the pandemic. I'm talking about the other ones. I'm talking about the lying pandemic and the denying pandemic and the adoration of ignorance pandemic and the adoration of corruption pandemic and the slimy grifter pandemic and the adoration of slimy grifter pandemic and the fake Christian pandemic and the fake patriot pandemic and the fake pro-life pandemic and the are you kidding me pandemic and the big-bellied white guys in love with their loudness us and acting like bullies pandemic, and the really skinny white guys in bulky vests and splotchy backpacks full of guns, long guns, acting like bullies pandemic, the killing pandemic, and I am fervently grappling for how to stop them. A bunch of pipsqueaks like me madly grappling for solution. There's a pipsqueaks like me madly grappling for solution pandemic, and the enemy is growing uglier, and there's a growing uglier pandemic, a going backwards pandemic, a falling downwards pandemic. And hey, what's up with the hate smart people pandemic and the hate integrity pandemic and the hate elegance and intelligence pandemic? It's so ignorant. They're so stupid. I hate them. Yeah, I know. I'm not supposed to say hate. There's a don't say hate pandemic. And I'm not supposed to call people stupid. There's a don't call people stupid pandemic. There's a be kinder pandemic. Try kindness pandemic. Feel guilty if you're failing at kindness pandemic. I inch sideways now to the left. I take funny little steps as if I'm walking blindfolded on a ledge. Sometimes I wear a cone when I go out to protect and hide my face. Then I take a hidden path through the forest, even though I'm spooked by hidden paths, spooked by forests with monster plants and rain-soaked trees, coldness bragging and lashing in the forest, clumsy shadows blocking all light. Turn on the light, I scream to the lady ferns. Turn the light on the lies, I scream to the pine tree, knocking my head against its trunk. But there's a waiting for the other shoe to drop pandemic. Oh, I'm grappling. I'm grappling for kindness. I'm grappling for calm. I'm grappling for light. And I'm hoping for a singing, not shooting pandemic, a peeping, not lying pandemic. And of course, I'm hoping for a poetry pandemic.
Thanks, Leanne. Leanne's third poem, particularly the ending, reminded me of this poem by Lawrence Ferlinghetti from Oconee Island of the Mind, which was the first poetry book I ever bought. I am waiting. I'm waiting for my case to come up, and I'm waiting for a rebirth of wonder. And I'm waiting for someone to really discover America and whale. And I'm waiting for the discovery of a new symbolic Western frontier. And I'm waiting for the American eagle to really spread its wings and straighten up and fly right. And I'm waiting for the age of anxiety to drop dead. And I'm waiting for the war to be fought, which will make the world safe for anarchy. And I'm waiting for the final withering away of all governments. And I'm perpetually awaiting a rebirth of wonder. I'm waiting for the second coming, and I'm waiting for a religious revival to sweep through the state of Arizona, and I'm waiting for the grapes of wrath to be stored, and I'm waiting for them to prove that God is really American, and I'm seriously waiting for Billy Graham and Elvis Presley to exchange roles, seriously. And I'm waiting to see God on television, piped onto church altars if only they can find the right channel to tune in on. And I'm waiting for the Last Supper to be served again with a strange new appetizer. And I'm perpetually awaiting a rebirth of wonder. I'm waiting for my number to be called. I'm waiting for the living end. And I'm waiting for Dad to come home, his pockets full of irradiated silver dollars. I'm waiting for the atomic test to end. And I'm waiting happily for things to get much worse before they improve. And I'm waiting for the Salvation Army to take over. And I'm waiting for the human crowd to wander off a cliff somewhere, clutching its atomic umbrella. I'm waiting for Ike to act. And I'm waiting for the meek to be blessed and inherit the earth without taxes. And I'm waiting for forests and animals to reclaim the earth as theirs. And I'm waiting for a way to be devised to destroy all nationalisms without killing anybody. And I'm waiting for linnets and planets to fall like rain. And I'm waiting for lovers and weepers to lie down together again in a new rebirth of wonder. I'm waiting for the great divide to be crossed, and I'm anxiously awaiting for the secret of eternal life to be discovered by an obscure general practitioner and save me forever from certain death. And I'm waiting for life to begin, and I'm waiting for the storms of life to be over. I'm waiting to set sail for happiness, and I'm waiting for a reconstructed Mayflower to reach America with its picture story and TV rights sold in advance to the natives. And I'm waiting for the lost music to sound again and the lost continent and a new rebirth of wonder. I'm waiting for the day that maketh all things clear, and I'm waiting for Old Man River to just stop rolling along past the country club, and I'm waiting for the deepest South to just stop reconstructing itself in its own image, and I'm waiting for a sweet segregated chariot to swing low and carry me back to old Virginia, and I'm waiting to old Virginia to discover just why darkies are born, and I'm waiting for God to look out from Lookout Mountain and see the ode to the Confederate dead as a real farce, and I'm awaiting retribution for what America did to Tom Sawyer, and I'm perpetually awaiting a rebirth of wonder. I'm waiting for Tom Swift to grow up. I'm waiting for the American boy to take off America's clothes and get on top of her. And I'm waiting for Alice in Wonderland to retransmit to me her total dream of innocence. And I'm waiting for Child Roland to come to the final darkening tower. And I'm waiting for Aphrodite to grow live arms at a final disarmament conference in a new rebirth of wonder. I'm waiting to get some intimations of immortality by recollecting my early childhood. And I'm waiting for the green mornings to come again, use dumb green fields to come back again. And I'm waiting for some strains of unpremeditated art to shake my typewriter. And I'm waiting to write the great indelible poem. And I'm waiting for the last long careless rapture. And I'm perpetually waiting for the fleeing lovers on the Grecian urn to catch each other up at last and embrace. And I am awaiting perpetually and forever, a renaissance of wonder. That was Lawrence Ferlinghetti. As a teenager, I was reading beat poets in coffee houses before I was reading my own stuff. And this is one of my all-time favorites by Allen Ginsberg. America. America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. America, $2.27, January 17th, 1956. I can't stand my own mind. America, when will we end the human war? Go fuck yourself with your atom bomb. I don't feel good. Don't bother me. I won't write my poem until I'm in my right mind. America, when will you be angelic? When will you take off your clothes? When will you look at yourself through the grave? America, why are your libraries full of tears? America, when will you send your eggs to India? I'm sick of your insane demands. When can I go into the supermarket and buy what I need with my good looks? America, after all, it is you and I who are perfect, not the next world. Your machinery is too much for me. You made me want to be a saint. There must be some other way to settle this argument. Burroughs is in Tangiers. I don't think he'll come back. It's sinister. Are you being sinister or is this some form of practical joke? I'm trying to come to the point. America, I refuse to give up my obsession. Stop pushing. I know what I'm doing. America, the plum blossoms are falling. I haven't read the newspaper for months. Every day somebody goes on trial for murder. America, I feel sentimental about the Wobblies. America, I used to be a communist when I was a kid. I'm not sorry. I smoke marijuana every chance I get. I sit in my house for days on end and stare at the roses in the closet. When I go to Chinatown, I get drunk and never get laid. My mind is made up. There's going to be trouble. You should have seen me reading Marx. My psychoanalyst thinks I'm perfectly right. I won't say the Lord's Prayer. I have mystical visions and cosmic vibrations. America, I still haven't told you what you did to Uncle Max after he came over from Russia. I'm addressing you. Are you going to let your emotional life be run by Time magazine? I'm obsessed by Time magazine. I read it every week. Its cover stares at me every time I slink past the corner candy store. I read it in the basement of the Berkeley Public Library. It's always telling me about responsibility. Businessmen are serious. Movie producers are serious. Everybody's serious but me. It occurs to me that I am America. I'm talking to myself again. Asia is rising against me. I haven't a Chinaman's chance. I better consider my national resources. My national resources consist of two joints of marijuana, millions of genitals, and unpublishable private literature that jet planes 1,400 miles an hour, and 25,000 mental institutions. I say nothing about my prisons, nor the millions of underprivileged who live in my flower pots under the light of 500 suns. I have abolished the whorehouses of France. Tangiers is the next to go. My ambition is to be president, despite the fact that I'm a Catholic.
America, how can I write a holy litany in your silly mood? I will continue like Henry Ford. My strophes are as individual as his automobiles. More so, they're all different sexes. America, I will sell you strophes, $2,500 apiece, $500 down on your old strophe. America, free Tom Mooney. America, save the Spanish loyalists. America, Sacco and Vanzetti must not die. America, when I was 7, Mama took me to communist cell meetings. They sold us garbanzos a handful per ticket. A ticket cost a nickel and the speeches were free. Everybody was angelic and sentimental about the workers. It was all so sincere. You have no idea what a good thing the party was in 1935. Scott Nearing was a grand old man, a real mensch. Mother Bloor made me cry. I once saw Israel Amter playing. Everybody must have been a spy. America, you don't really want to go to war. America, it's them Russians. Them Russians and them Chinamen and them Russians. The Russia wants to eat us alive. The Russia's power mad. She wants to take our cars from our garage. Her wants to grab Chicago. Her needs Red Reader's Digest. Her wants our auto plant in Siberia. Him big bureaucracy running our filling stations. That no good, ugh. Him make Indians learn read. Him need big black man, ha! Her make us all work 16 hours a day, help! America, this is quite serious. America, this is the impression I get from looking in the television set. Is this correct? I better get right down to the job. It's true I don't want to join the army or turn lathes in precision parts factories. I'm nearsighted and psychopathic anyway. America, I'm putting my queer shoulder to the wheel. Allen Ginsberg from 56. Things don't change much, do they? So enough history. Let's think of the future. The future of KBOO. We could use your help in donations, cash. You know, we always need volunteers, too, and we need some technical help. Donations to the station via KBO.com, or you can mail or bring a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, 97214. Great little neighborhood. Pizza just around the corner. But back to the present and my second featured poet, David Abel. David is a writer and editor and the proprietor of Passages Bookshop in Northwest Portland, a founding member of the Spare Room Reading Series. His recent publications include a chapbook of poems, Equifinality, two books based on verbal performance scores, XIV Eclipses and Selective Durations, and a visual narrative carrier. David is, you know, multimodal. The first volume of an ongoing hybrid genre serial work, Sweep, is forthcoming. And here's David Abel reading excerpts from a series of 33 poems titled O Echo.
O Echo. Sexy water spiders raised by television never met Dietrich Fischer Dieskau on the Rundschau, but out on the magazine's most scenic highway, where all roads lead to Reno, in order to end up as a line in a sonnet, all form is dependent on reason for its place in the dictionary. Folk song settings primarily reminding that the real news is history, and the rest an inside joke. When they say it, it is a lie, but when you repeat it, it's the truth. We die defending the indefensible against the intolerable, absolute. So there's a limit to tolerance? No, tolerance is the limit. The enemies of my enemies have enemies who have enemies. And the American Taliban has its Supreme Court break the deadlock. Dreadlock. Dreadnought. Fear not. Fear much. Say it isn't so. It isn't so. It isn't so bad. It isn't so's you'd notice. It isn't, so it must be. In the margin of the score, the composer wrote, "The real news is history," but they meant histories. And when we repeat it, we're bound to remember that the music never lies. The music never lies. Still, the music, music never. But what about the spiders? They built a wall in water so the frogmen couldn't say plop. They were predators who'd escaped from the garden, and their dirty wars powered our prosody. Disguised as a parade, a rolling expropriation, an endless sentence woven into a basket the technical emperor disdains. The last iris, the prohibited coin, a wall. You may be privileged to watch weather. The last iris of the summer, the coin that would kill the koi, a wall seen from a shelter. The music of the spheres, a transcription of other motions. The mountain in the mist is alive, is a lie. I want to take it back, what I said about the mountain, but nothing can be unwritten, unsaid. The lie is as real as anything. The mountain, the mist, the cranes, the gleaming windows. Dios, ayúdame a cruzar este desierto. No me dejes morir. I promised you I'd write about that picture, but I never did. Degrees of separation. Desaparecido. The skill, the luck to be born, but not yet. The 9th annual memorial disconnect. 9 billion tons of ice. A fateful rhyme made possible by misspelling. The ocean's flat in a fairy tale of inundation and the end of time. Inhabitants of derelict vehicles, even academic philosophers, don't earn their luck. We burn in other people's shadows. Virginia and Ray took to the water. Atala and Jibananda, perhaps the train and the tram. No one can say. A book can teach me how Bengali sounds, but nothing can tell me what a picture looks like. Content warning, the sonnet and the world that provoked it contain suicide and mental illness, long playing records, Hungarian actors, the protection and decoration of concrete structures, simple stories suffused with nostalgia, concealed relations of control, against which heresy, better yet, terror, yea, annihilation, only reverse. For Franz Kamen. The transformation of the name Kaikhosru Sarabji into Norkin, embedded with various inapplicable footnotes, was performed only once. Does wag mean wagoneer? Do I smell fresh figs or tequila? The food critic's advice came too late to save any lives. The novice made up a word for everything and nothing. France designed the rules to be as difficult as possible and laughed contagiously as he stumbled through the syllables. I was there then. I'm here now. Where are you? Are you working or do you study? We all recognized it as another unrealizable surface, just as overtones and other linked conjectures, bone and sinew in the body or the music, can't be lifted out of place. Plume rise. They were worried about the explosion of literature, recommending formulas for non-buoyant plumes, foot soldiers in the war of knowledge. By implication, simple men, doing their duty, playing cricket, singing Cherish in pastel uniforms in an underground soda fountain. No creed, no heresy. The transubstantiation of slavery, crucifixion without resurrection, without end. And then the echo in hearing inherited. Why I am not a philosopher. If you're on the East Coast, come visit. I have my own little piece of the Atlantic Ocean, and there's always something happening. A decade between one shattering realization and the next, click of a slide in a tray, or clatter of a claw in a projector, the blue swelling around the socket of an eye, three generations phased around a cafe table, hair colors new to nature, the few sweet years in the cataract of a life. Barely a data point in the acidification of the sea, watching coral colonies die, regenerate, leave records, play an unsuspected role in a consequent sentience current sentience can't construe. For Lewis Telzer, the oceans hold 97% of the planet's facts. Every million or so photographs in a cloud syndicate to form a single drop of rain. Your mother murdered, your brother goes after the suspect, has a heart attack, and dies. Is that how the story must end? The unreadable writer gets stabbed. That's cultural history, right? But what if we're not wearing any clothes? Or it's your anniversary? There's a double palindrome in dying the day before the filming is set to begin. The next biographer contradicting the previous one, questioning the nature of interpretation. But oh, how you could sing. The tea's bitter, I burned the potatoes, it's St. Joseph's Book of Acts all over again. Yet the sweetness breaks through. You can do everything wrong, and it turns out fine. What if no one knows how to do anything? The music speaks for itself and should be allowed to. When the record's over, all's said and done, except for the future of all topics, forbidden or not. That is, life goes on, or something takes its momentary place on a planet once so commodious that it gave rise to fantastic pianos, diverse vegetables that caramelized, giant moths, asymmetrical myths, elaborate enlivenings in an anthropocatalytic epoch. Please, go back in time. I'm not asking you to do anything impossible. Just move a little bit to the west. Start the third movement over again. Scroll back up to see the photos that you sent on Thursday. But you were talking about the past, irretrievable beginnings, and the romance of romance. The concerto is finished. The synchronic composer understood what the orchestra wanted to be. Divided, elected, exhausted, like a forest. Recursive, vertiginous, cascade. Bikemobile, bookmobile. Morning commutes a sentence, forgets a suggestion, abandoned for a quotation. Help make writers, readers, every 14 cars, the mutual effacement wheels took for ground. The history of barbarism is history, period. A truism, i.e. truistic. Altitudes and attitudes. We have no choice but to take our time. A crystal, a grain, a tone, a punch, a dye, a microtone, a nanoplast, so little, so late, so unilateral, the error of time. Reverberations that the dead deposit while leaving through a hole with the unmistakable shape of a voice, whose envelope is an embrace, a metal matrix infatuated, mothering all reception. Sententious Sunday broadcasts for apostates of the pseudo-prayer of the true clock. Poised between the playback and the gutter, between the howling breach and the rattling departure, listening is round. What was once living muscle caught between nerves and hydrology will spawn speculation, feeding bears to drones. Inside the bamboo flute, a tintinabulator rushes to the confluence, snowmelt piling up branches, breezes lately agitated in an uneasy alliance with the night. Storms scrub the shoulders of the volcano. The creek carries the news to the sea. The sewer sibyl whispers, "Polio is coming." Do I believe in communication? Got any negative ions? How about a palm-sized stone the shape of Ohio? There's an island in the middle of the Salmon River. It's not really an island, but the rocks are painted, you know what I mean? That's the palm of an 11-year-old boy who already knows the best way around a fallen tree. Look, leaves, fish, birds, bears, rocks are reading us until the record inundates the recorder and all of collateral creation. Borders expire, daguerreotypes bloom, businesses die. Get used to it. The musical equivalent of a grain of sand under a microscope, dying peacefully and quietly in her sleep. Accessibility, to be cut off forever from the dream world, to lose the thread so fine, so tenuous. The taste of rain-soaked leaves. The fated poet was a ping-pong savant, an Olympian minus the immortality. Incompetent bureaucrat spent the afterday planting Morgans by the thousands, misappropriating queens, thus putting paid to the royal flushes of the rest of the pack. Other buried stories of the sporting class likewise beginning to surface in the thirsty poems and lakes of the plateau. For Rodney Konecki. Does anyone remember the rigors of rural electrification? The old roads, pseudo-cedars, hemlocks, firs, and alders do. No doubt the Honorable Messrs. Webb and Pooh. Are we doomed to the cost of our consumption? Ascending electromagnetic peaks to gaze at exoplanets, silent upon some sonnet-like vantage, we don't escape our homeostatic fate. In Gaia's Me Too moment, we can't unwind the generative coil with an infrared surmise. unweave tomorrow's web of gold, when every metabolic process is wholly susceptible to paraphrase in the homecoming story we've been told. For Grey Wolf, forgetfulness, impatience, blindness in the face of love, identity, O dearest dromedary syndrome, would you end? Inchworm, candidate geometer, circumnavigating daylight's open book, salmonid, polytropical returner, whirling round the Camp Creek pool, would you rather sing, paint, write, or sew? Bridging the gaps in an iambic meander, or leaping the logjam, all muscle and speed, transformation's traction will drive you through the moth or smolt or heart-shaped die, till every unreal part of your design is realized.
Thank you, David. I want to remind you writers out there in Oregon that the deadline for Literary Arts' Oregon Literary Fellowships is Friday, August 2nd. Applying is free online and very easy. The odds are terrible. Over 400 applicants for around 8 fellowships. You'd think Literary Arts could do a lot more for writers. They bought a place on the near east side for a spiffy new headquarters with bookstores and coffee shop, and they'll be administering the artist residency to be starting at Ursula Le Guin's huge house near Forest Park. Literary Arts, please share the love and give more help and recognition for local writers. I mean, it's great that we now have a number of nationally recognized writers here in Portland, which wasn't the case when I first got here. And Literary Arts has helped that, but I think it's important to seed the home front, and they're doing some things. They have some good series and some good people involved. I can't complain, but sometimes I still do. Okay, and here's some other current poetry. Fairly new book. I'm not sure if it's officially out even. Fassbinder by Drew Pissarro, who lives on the other coast. It's a collection of poems inspired by Rainier Fassbinder's movies. And we'll start with the opening. Dear Rainier, I've never written a fan letter to anyone. How strange to write one now, even to try. Everyone knows you're dead. Everyone. And yet if I were to write to someone, why not you? I'm not crazy. That's why I've never written a fan letter to anyone. And writing to you isn't writing to no one. You're still who you are, even when you die. Everyone knows you're dead. Everyone. But dying doesn't mean you're done. Not really. What a lie. Here's another lie. I've never written a fan letter to anyone. Because in truth, I'm writing this one to you, this bit of scribbling on the fly. Everyone knows you're dead. Everyone. What's the point then? There is none. We'll never meet and say hello. There is none. I've never written a fan letter to anyone. Everyone knows you're dead. Everyone. Rio dos Mortes. Even Munich had Warhol-like beauties, aimless rich kids who did silly dances, then swapped their pretty partners for sex. Yet, unlike the factory's high-end hopefuls, Fassbinder's forgotten superstars wanted more than 15 minutes of fame. These fashionistas ached for forever. Psychiatrists say they suffered from the Peruvian complex, an all-but-obsolete mental illness with the following primary characteristic, an unexplainable need to get your ass to South America, ASAP. Rumor has it, three actors turned lovers actually found the secret map to Machu Picchu's underground caves, where tunnels led them to sleeping spaceships that rocketed them to a nameless planet. Others say the intrepid trio simply ended up face down floating in a river, their unblinking eyes gazing at wonders reserved for the dead. The Merchant of Four Seasons. Really, who knows exactly where to start when telling a story that's this extreme of a man who lives in a coffee cart? Like a mobile home that's fueled by caffeine. Amphibious, if broke, he fills his orders, an apple turnover, a coffee with cream, then pays his rent in dollars and quarters to brothers who work at the fruit stand nearby. Come night, he'll wolf down the day's leftovers and dream in his sugar high, high in the sky, of profits his tip jar has yet to supply. That's Drew Pissarro from his new poetry book, Fassbinder. We're up to winding down the show here on KBOO Talking Earth. Thanks to all of you listening. Thanks to all of you who have contributed to the station. Hopefully that's, you know, one big set. Everyone's listening. Everyone's contributing. Everyone's spreading the word of poetry. Thanks to all the poets out there. Let's get more. It's summer. We need outside festivals. We need readings on street corners. That's how the Portland Poetry Festival started out, 50 years ago? Poets on various street corners. That was allowed then. What would happen now if you were reading poetry on a street corner? Do you need a permit? Would someone ask you for money? Would someone suspect you were selling drugs? I mean, what's going on with the world? I'm feeling a little bit like Talking Earth founder Walt Curtis. Thank you, Walt Curtis. Thank you, Barbara Lamorticella. Thank you, Patrick Booker.
Tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
The month of June is Pride Month, an opportunity to shine a light on the vast heritage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning, intersex, asexual, or agender, as well as